Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors, as well as several authors. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker at that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now, and in that time I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and have been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. I'm also a senior editorial researcher at the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication. We're the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find that website at cbj.ca, and you can find out more about me at my website, mrpma.ca. That's mrpma.ca. I'm really excited today to have as my guest Sharon Ingle, who is also a friend of mine and a very good friend of my wife's. Sharon is a lawyer who has practiced criminal and family law in Ontario since 1986. She has been involved in numerous high-profile cases, including several murder cases. And during her legal career, she was also a part-time prosecutor and mediator. Sharon has also taught law at the bar admission course and is presently a part-time professor at the University of Toronto. At the university, she teaches advanced criminal law as well as courtroom skills for accountants. Also, she teaches yoga and cycling at the university. As well as a long legal career, Sharon has had a lengthy athletic career. In 1993, she qualified for the Canadian national team for a triathlon. And for those of you who do not know what a triathlon is, that is swimming followed by cycling and then running. Sharon participated in the World Championships on 8 occasions in the Olympic triathlon, which is a 1.5K swim, followed by a 40K bike ride, followed by a 10-kilometer run. Sharon is passionate about athletics and helping other athletes, and therefore has coached swimming, cycling, and running. She has coached the Mississauga Special Olympics running program called Excess Energy. She has trained numerous women, helping them to complete their first triathlon. She also teaches a Learn to Bike program for women annually. And when Sharon is not working or training, she enjoys playing the piano and volunteers with the Hope and Healing Music Program at the Credit Valley Hospital. She is currently learning to play guitar and harmonica. Welcome to the show today, Sharon.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for having me.
Now, that's only the start of the bio that I got through there, because you have a very long bio, but you've had an interesting journey besides being a criminal defense lawyer and a world-class athlete. You've been battling cancer for 4 years now, so we'll get into that, because that is an encouraging story for people who are facing or know people facing cancer. You're doing amazingly well, considering, and so we'll talk about that as part of the show. But I'm excited to have you on the show today, and of course, most of your life has been spent as a criminal defense lawyer, and being my wife working with you for a number of years, I got to know a little bit about the ins and outs of that profession, and that is an interesting profession. So tell me about that, because you've been doing that since, when was that, 1986?
86.
And so as I mentioned in the bio, you've defended a number of murder cases. And mostly what I found out is I used to not always have a great opinion of defense lawyers, but I've heard enough tremendously great stories of people who really were innocent and involved in, let's say, nutty situations, and they have been able to rebuild their lives because of the work you've done. And so there are always those cases, really great cases, where you say, thank goodness that someone was there to defend them. So tell me about how you got involved in that, how you enjoyed it, and maybe some of the exciting parts of being a criminal defense lawyer.
Well, sure. It's a long story, but, you know, back when I was early teens, I guess, I used to sit on the back porch of my parents' house, and my neighbor was a court reporter. So in those days, they still typed up all the transcripts. It was before computers. And he used to do all of the murder cases. So I was interested in the criminal law, even at that early age. And so he would let me read the transcripts. Now, reading transcripts is not like reading a novel. It reads quite different, and it's not as exciting. But in any event, I was fascinated by this. And so I would read the transcripts, and I decided right then and there that that's what I wanted to do. Now, my parents, they worked hard to try to suggest to me that maybe I should do something with a little bit more money and a little less bad notoriety, I suppose. So, they're trying to suggest maybe, corporate commercial law, do something like that. But I was determined that I wanted to do criminal work, and even as a student, I started off doing student legal aid, where I would defend criminal cases. So that's basically how I got into it. I, went to law school and completed that, and then started my own practice right out of law school, and that was in Mississauga, and that was in 1986. So what happened is, originally, when you hang up your own shingle, so to speak, you have to do whatever comes your way, work-wise. Mm-hmm. We had a big real estate boom on at that time, so I learned real estate, even though that wasn't really what I was interested in. And then some criminal cases started coming in, and I defended them. And once you defend somebody and you do a good job, well, that's it. Word's out, and your name is all over, in the jails, among people that need it, and you end up getting quite a following. So that's what happened. And in terms of one of my first cases that really made me realize that people do just get in strange situations, and not everybody who is charged with a criminal offense is necessarily guilty, nor are they necessarily bad people. So I represented a young person, and this was before your wife's time with me, but I represented a young person who had become addicted to drugs. And through my representation of him, one of the things that we did was we got him into a drug rehab program. And the good story is that most of my clients don't call me again unless they need me. So he, however, called. I always tell people, I want you to call me with a good story. Call me with some good news, because we never get the good news. We always get, the bad news. So he took me up on that about 5 or 6 years later. So he was, I guess, about 16 or 17 at the last time I had represented him. And he called me and he told me, I want to tell you that you changed my life, and getting into that rehab was the best thing that I ever did. And now I'm married. I have a young daughter. I'd like to bring the family by to see you. I mean, it was an amazing thing. So that really gave me the feeling that I was actually helping people rather than, as the public sees it, in defending the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And there's enough of those amazingly heartwarming stories to really keep you going. I'm thinking of one, but won't mention it, but there's one I'm thinking of where it was like, wow, an amazing story.
I know the one you're thinking of. I do know the one you're thinking of, and that is an amazing story. And I don't know whether you want to get into that or not. It's sort of a long story, and
But there are some great, great cases. Now, one would think, people listening and people who watch all these Law and Order shows, that a criminal defense lawyer, ooh, you've made it, and you must have had to make it your definite purpose in life to be one. But if you Google Sharon Ingle, there's like about 100 listings about athletic accomplishments. And because you are my wife, and of course will tell me that you don't speak to the press, so you don't get a lot of press on your cases. But how is it that someone who has to exert the time and energy to be a criminal defense lawyer be able to participate in triathlons and running and swimming and all of the various athletic endeavors you do, because both of those are, you would say, full-time passions, so not a lot of people could do both of them.
Well, you know, I thought that I couldn't do one without the other, and that was probably right, because as you can imagine, being a criminal defense lawyer, and you know from your wife working with me, there is a lot of stress in the business. I mean, we were carrying, you know, 3 murder cases and over 200 files. So it is a lot of work and a lot of stress. And people call you at all hours of the day and night, and there's problems happening all the time. There's never a dull moment. So I felt that the athletics helped to balance me in that I probably am one of the calmest lawyers at the courthouse, because by the time I get to the courthouse, I've already done my workout for the day, and I feel very relaxed, I feel calm, I feel ready, I feel balanced, I feel ready to handle the day. So it was accidental that I got into triathlon, really. I was a high-level tennis player for a number of years, and then my tennis coach said, you know, why don't, he was doing some triathlons, and he said, you know, you're so fit, why don't you try one of these things? And I thought, me? This is crazy. I don't really run. Yes, I bike. I bike to the tennis courts, and yeah, I know how to swim, but this is crazy. But anyway, I decided, well, you know, I would try it, and this was in 1992, and I did my first triathlon, and that was it. I handed him my tennis racket and said, I'm done. I'm going to do this now, because when you cross the finish line, you feel such a great sense of accomplishment. It doesn't matter where you finish, how fast you were, how slow you were, just completing the event makes you feel good. Whereas in tennis, there were all kinds of problems. You know, there was cheating going on, there were always questionable line calls, et cetera, et cetera. But with triathlon, I got a great deal of personal satisfaction. So then in 1993, at the Fitness Institute, they happened to have a triathlon team, so I decided that I would join and train. And then accidentally, I qualified for the Canadian national team. And I say accidentally because I had no idea that the race was a national team qualifier. I didn't even know that there was a national team for triathlon. I just happened to be doing the race. And in the race, I actually finished fifth, and they were taking the top 3 women for the national team, but for whatever reason, 2 other people ahead of me declined the spot, and so they called me and asked me whether I would participate, and that's how it all got started. And then I just got on the training schedule that was prescribed by the team and worked the work around it, let's put it that way. I mean, you have to be at the courthouse at a certain time, and you have to do things at a certain time, but I would see, you know, clients at odd hours, and I'd make time on weekends for clients so that I could fit in my training.
Wow. And so as I said before, like both of those are what people would consider full-time careers or passions. And so to combine both of those, and you did that for so many years, and so here you are, you're cruising along. You're a well-known criminal defense lawyer, and you don't have to chase business. Business is now chasing you down. You're a world-class triathlete and placing in various events, and then cancer.
Yes.
And so far, you're just rolling along in life, and then cancer comes along, as it does to so many women. Breast cancer. Was it breast cancer?
Yes,
yeah.
It is breast cancer, yes.
Yeah, and, well, one thing I know from your battle with that is that you're being an athlete and being in such amazing condition must have really helped the cancer battle, but at the same time, you have to drop both your passions to fight a battle that you're not familiar with at that point.
That's very true. And it's funny that I was doing one of my passions. I was racing in triathlon at the time that I found the lump. And what happened was that I'd raced the world championships that year in 2008 in Vancouver, and I'd done really well. Like, for me, I'm a minimalist trainer compared to most people. I do the minimum amount of training, and I would ride my bike to court as part of my training, my heavy bike with the computer on it and the files and everything. And I figured, well, you know, when I got on my road bike, I could fly. But anyway, back to the diagnosis, I was doing the last race in the USA of the season, and I was running, and I felt something funny in my chest, just tight. And so I started to, after the race, I was massaging it, and then I found something moving. First, I thought it was my pec muscle, because that's where the lump was sitting. So first, I thought it was just too much training, or I'd strained it or something, but then when it moved, I realized this is not good. So that started my journey into cancer. I mean, it was a month later when they, well, I guess 3 weeks later when they officially, you know, biopsied it and diagnosed it. So that was the start of it.
And that's a pretty scary time initially when you get this diagnosis. And a criminal defense lawyer's calendar is pretty busy. So there's a lot of things you have to drop, and there's a lot of things you don't know about this, and so tell me about that time and the treatment you went through, because you beat that one. You actually are beating a second one, but tell me about the treatments and even maybe the second bout of cancer that you've fought recently.
Actually, I'm on number three, Tom.
tell me about this journey, because this, the breast cancer diagnosis, was just the start.
Yet
you're on the other end of the phone with me today. So let's go through it and how you felt and how you battled it. And I know one thing that was incredible that I couldn't believe. It's like you rode your bike to chemotherapy treatment 65 kilometers each way during your treatment. And I was like, wow, that's crazy.
That's right. And that was in fight number two. So, but that's right. I was getting treated down at Sunnybrook, and I live on the border of Mississauga and Oakville. So that the route that I took, the Waterfront Trail and then the Dawn Trail, that was 65 kilometers. And, you know, I did it because it was the only thing that made me feel normal. I mean, going to the hospital, seeing the doctors, being hooked up to the, you know, the chemotherapy, that did not make me feel normal. And the best part of the day was getting on the bike, making sure I had a couple of bottles of Gatorade because my stomach was sometimes upset after the chemo, and riding away from the hospital and saying, look at me, I'm beating this, I'm on my bike, I'm leaving, and I don't have to deal with this now for another 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever the next appointment was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the first time, when I was first, it's very, very difficult to lose what your sense of normal is. And my sense of normal was getting up, training, going to the courthouse, dealing with that, going back to the office. And so when you have, when you're diagnosed with breast cancer and they tell you, well, you have to start your chemotherapy immediately, you know, and you don't have any choice about this, things do turn upside down. So thanks mainly to your wife who the clients loved and managed to balance a lot of things, a lot of balls in the air. And, you know, my mentor and some other lawyers who helped to take over the cases, I was able originally to get things covered. But, you know, the sense of loss is difficult to cope with, especially since once you're getting chemotherapy, it's not, you don't feel good. So it's not very easy to get to the pool in the morning and complete the workout. And, you know, training at that level just wasn't going to happen. And you have to accept there's a new normal for yourself, and that's very difficult. So round one was I had 8 months of chemotherapy, and that was every 3 weeks, and it was really aggressive, and I felt pretty lousy. But I found when I went to the pool that, the coach gave me all the pool toys, so I got to use flippers and, you know, anything that would help. And he would tell me, just do the warm-up, see how you feel. And he even got to know my schedule. So he'd know, you know, day five isn't very good, but day 10 we're coming around, and it was kind of on a cycle. So I continued to swim, and the provincial coach came into the pool one night during our practice, and I knew that they were going to have some qualifications for the provincial team. And so I said to my coach, well, I'm just going to leave now because, you know, I'm not going to qualify. And he said, you know, I think you should swim anyway. I think your times are going to be good enough. So I did. I swam the eight events. I qualified in the eight events and went off to the Ontario Provincial Championships and was lucky enough. I say lucky because I don't think my times were great. But, you know, it's all relative to the competition. So lucky enough to win three medals there, and that qualified me for the Canadian Swim Championships, which, interestingly enough, was 4 days before surgery. So I had to ask the surgeon, and he and I didn't have the best rapport. You know, he's a very, very skilled man, but, you know, we just didn't, I didn't like, of course, what he was telling me. And so, as with all the treatment, I kick and fight and scream and then do what they suggest. So that's kind of the strategy. But anyway, he told me, look, nobody's ever asked me this question before. I mean, people can't get out of bed. If you think you're going to go swim the Canadian Championships, well, fine with me, bring in the gold medal. So I thought, yeah, now, here's a guy who has never, ever had chemotherapy, that's for sure. But anyway, I did go. I swam. My training partner was there. That helped a lot, and ended up being awarded a gold medal there. So I did wear it into surgery, and I asked to see my surgeon before the surgery, and my husband says to me, poor guy, no pressure, you know, you're a lawyer. And you got this gold medal around your neck, and you're asking the guy to save your arm, and you know, the poor guy has no pressure. But anyway, that was round one. I went through the surgery, and then I went through aggressive radiation, and I continued on the drug Herceptin, which is a biological agent to help prevent the spread of cancer. And apparently I failed that, because when I was off of that for 1 month, I started to have excruciating pain in my chest. So round two is that the cancer has metastasizes to my bones. So it goes into my sternum and into my L5. Apparently it fractures my back. And I'm running. I don't even know that I have this problem. So anyway, I certainly felt the chest pain, but nothing in the back. So anyway, now we're back to, okay, you need to go back on chemotherapy. And I did so for 2 years. I had 23 treatments of chemotherapy, and that's when I was down at Sunnybrook, and that's when I was on the trial drug, TDM1 it's called, and that drug kept me stable for quite a long time. And then round three is that most recently, well, October of last year, I go into the hospital for my regular chemo treatment, having ridden my bike there, and the doctor says to me, there's something wrong with you. I think the cancer's gone into your brain. And I'm like, what? I didn't feel any different. He had me do the neurological tests, which are very familiar to me because they're the same tests that the police administer at the roadside. So, you know, the finger to the nose and walk heel to toe and all of that. And apparently he didn't like what he saw. So he said, you know, you have to have an emergency brain scan tomorrow. Which I did, and right after the scan, they said, go see your doctor. So you know that's not good. So apparently there were two half the size of golf ball tumors in my brain. So they had to send that to the specialists, and the specialists, there's a team in Toronto that look at these things and decide what they can do. So I was fortunate because of where they were sitting, apparently was quite operable. And even though when they said you have to have brain surgery, I stopped listening. My girlfriend, yeah. My girlfriend was like, "Yay, they can take it out." But it involved a full craniotomy, so they cut your head from one side to the other, essentially, and then go, yeah, and then go into your brain. Well, good thing I didn't see this operation before I became part of it, because I don't think I would have signed up. But they told me that if I didn't do it, I'd only have 8 to 15 weeks to live. So, again, you know, I kicked and screamed and fussed about it, but there was no choice. I want to live. I'm enjoying every day, and I'm quite happy I now had the surgery, because actually it's funny, I feel clearer now in my brain. I realize now that there was something wrong, but
yeah.
I just didn't notice it, and
wow.
neither did anybody else. So anyway, that's round three. So I'm 6 weeks out of surgery, and let's see, I've ridden my bike today, and I intend to swim after our interview. So I'm doing really, really well. Everything is healed completely. And here I am, still in the battle, because they tell me now, you know, they want me to have some more aggressive radiation. And so anyway, I'll be having some scans shortly, and we'll see whether I have to sign up for that or not. I'm, as usual, resistant.
Yeah,
a difficult patient. But anyway, that's the story. And through my treatment, I want to keep moving, because a moving target is hard to hit, Tom. That's what I figure. So that's
kind of
my motto.
Exactly. And I'm a non-compliant patient, so I love the kicking and screaming. And I don't usually always do what they say, maybe half the time. But when it's a life and death thing, you probably listen a little closer and probably follow a little more what they say than I have followed my doctors. And so for most of your life, while you're a criminal defense lawyer, world-class triathlete, things are under your control. You're not even chasing business now. You're enjoying life. Now, since the cancer, it's like your life is not under your control. And that must be a little frustrating when you're a high-powered person and now you're having to kind of live based on the cancer treatments rather than on your passions and the legal field that you were in, although now you're teaching. And so, talk about that, about losing that kind of, your life was just sailing, and then this happens. And so you lose that kind of control. But then I've also heard from people who've had cancer that sometimes there are some really great things that come out of it. And that sounds nutty, but a lot of people say cancer is a gift. So talk about that journey and where you are now, where you can say that, yeah, I've actually benefited in some ways from this.
Well, there's no doubt that I'm a different person today than I was 4.5 years ago when I was diagnosed. And I do say cancer is a gift. And let me back up, though, first, in terms of life being out of control. That is for sure. I think that is the hardest thing that we have to face as cancer patients. I mean, we all know that there is an end date sometime. I mean, we could walk out the door and be hit by a car, or, you know, things happen and life changes. And for somebody like me who was, I don't want to say control freak, but let me say that, who was very much liked control and very much was in control, to lose control is very, very difficult. And I won't say that I have mastered that, because I don't think I have. I mean, I think that every day is a challenge. But what I have received is the gift of time, for one thing, because I'm not working at the moment, so I have, well, I'm teaching part-time, and I'm actually teaching fitness part-time, and I'm writing books, but other than those things, I don't have the day-to-day stress of the criminal practice. So, you know, and I don't think you realize how much stress you actually have in your day-to-day life until you step aside from it. One of the gifts is stepping out of it. Another gift is that you never really know how much support you have until you get diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. So, you know, I have a friend that stepped up and has come to every single appointment with me. And every doctor's appointment, every chemotherapy appointment, you know, has done this for 4.5 years. And although we were good friends, I never imagined that somebody would do that for me. So, you know, friendships strengthen, marriages strengthen, at least mine has. I mean, my husband has been extremely supportive throughout all of this, and I know that a lot of people aren't that fortunate, but
right.
I was, and that's a gift. And in fact, one of the pictures that you've put up on your site shows a pink cancer butterfly, which is called Freedom from Breast Cancer. And that butterfly he designed in my honor when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And we have sold, well, I said, I think to you in my email, hundreds, but it might be thousands. I don't know how many we've sold, but we have given the proceeds to cancer research. And when I say that, I actually have met all of the researchers at Sunnybrook Hospital. I made it my business to find out what was up and coming in cancer research, and I would direct the money specifically to support a certain trial. So people who would donate money to one of my cycling events, because I didn't say it, but I've done many, many cycling events for cancer, even while on chemotherapy. They have an event called the Healing Cycle, which is a big fundraiser for cancer. But anyways, I would donate the monies that I would raise specifically to a certain research trial so that people would know that it's not just going into the big pit of money for breast cancer research. It's going specifically to something. Because I think that's one of the frustrating things about breast cancer is, wow, you know, we have all of these pink events, and where's the money going, really? And, you know, people donate, and they want to support the cause, but they don't know specifically where it's going. So I wanted to be a little bit different with that. So just lost my train of thought there.
Now, is there a website for those butterflies?
There is. My husband, my story and the butterfly is on birdsandbugs.ca, and people
right.
can purchase them there, and the money still goes to cancer research, and I'm still planning to, in fact, in March, depending on what the doctors say, but assuming, as I always do, that I keep wanting a clean bill of health, and I'm always assuming I'm going to get one. So assuming that I'm not doing any treatment, I do intend to ride across Florida again for cancer research. I've done that twice, not the same route, but I have done it twice, and Bike Florida puts on an event every year, and people are encouraged to raise funds for whatever their passion is or whatever their favorite charity is. So that's my plan. We'll see whether it comes to fruition.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Bible says somewhere that man makes plans and God laughs. So we won't talk about the plans too loudly because
we don't want
to make God laugh too much. But let's just say, God willing, that will be the plans. But he has had an interesting journey for your life, and I'm very, in my interviews and anything I do, I'm very unapologetic about saying that my faith helps me endure 24/7 pain for 45 years. And I know and have seen that your faith has really helped sustain you a lot as well, because you can't have these things happen to you without at some point having a conversation with God and asking him, what the heck are you doing and how can I benefit from this?
Well, true, and I think that, you know, I ask him that question all the time, and I think the answer that I'm hearing, and I don't know whether it's necessarily the only answer, but, you know, I think things happen to people for a reason, and I think that I may be here to try to help other people that are going through this journey. And I don't necessarily mean just by inspiration, but there may be something more, such as advocacy or such as other things that I can do for other people, because really that is what I want to do. And God has given me a miracle. There is no question that, you know, getting through the brain surgery the way I did, And somewhat inspired by you, too, because I did try to ignore them and walk to the furthest washroom that I possibly could. And I was up walking around. I was up walking around when they were telling me, that I shouldn't be up walking around. And
nice.
I was climbing stairs and being defiant,
one of
your things is to, always talk about going to the furthest bathroom. So that's what I was doing. It was on a different ward. And they came after me, and what was I doing, and why was I up? But, I just told them. So anyway, but I think that there's no question that coming through this surgery like I have is a miracle. And, I'm continuing to have a conversation with God about, where we're going from here, where I'm going from here, and what is it I'm supposed to be doing for others.
Amen. And that's kind of gets you onto looking what you can do for others. When you're a criminal defense lawyer and a world-class triathlete, there's not always time to be asking God, what can I do for others? Because you don't have the time. And then you also spoke about friends and how that gets you through. And I think people that go through any kind of illness like that, that is something that jumps out in front of them. And it's incredible in my case because I'm a member of a church that had been going for a long time. When I've had surgeries, I almost have to buy a second fridge because I have people coming by lunch and dinner and bringing meals, and I almost needed a social secretary, and I didn't get a lot of rest because you find out who cares about you. And I even know from the Brampton courthouse of people breaking down and people crying and people upset and people asking my wife all the time how you're doing. And so as a criminal defense lawyer, even you think like half of your life is battling against the other side. And yet you see when things happen that it's kind of a community more than a battle.
That's very true. And I think, It is surprising to me. The second fridge is a very good point. The social secretary is another good point. I mean, it eventually got to the point where I put a message on my phone with an update because I just, I couldn't handle all of the phone calls, and the support was overwhelming. And my my girlfriend that attended at all the appointments, she also spoke to many people who were calling for updates, and so that was really helpful. But I know it is absolutely amazing what happens in this situation. And before that, as a criminal defense lawyer, we're not known to be very emotional. Okay, those of us that work in the legal system, we don't break down and cry because we hear a lot of nasty things, and so we're pretty immune to all of that. So when colleagues are doing that, that says something. And I certainly appreciate all of the support and good wishes, and I'm sure that in the prayers too. I'm on the prayer list at a number of churches, and I do believe that has helped, no doubt in my mind.
Well, our prayer team has prayed for you a lot. You've been on our list a number of times, and my wife has been up for prayer for you countless times. And so all of those things help. And sometimes people, there's nothing they can do, friends of yours, but they can pray, and that's the most that they can do, not all that they can do. And so those are tremendous blessings to have people care enough that they're praying for you. And that's tremendous, and it's very encouraging for people who pray for others when they come through things like this, and you're like, wow, I think God is answering my prayers. And so that's tremendous. And now also, since you've been facing your battles, you've also started writing books, and you got 4 of them written now and waiting to be published. What are they about?
Well, they all relate to healing except for the court novel. The court novel is based on a true story, but of course I have to change names, and I've taken some liberty with the facts, and that was based on one of the big cases that I had done out of the airport. So, and of course, your wife knows all about that, and and was with me throughout that case. So that's one. The other ones deal with healing. And I found I became a certified yoga instructor during my first chemotherapy because I found that meditating and doing yoga was very calming for the mind. And, you know, one of the things with having this kind of disease is that you're constantly thinking about it. Worrying about it. So if you can take your mind out of that space, either through prayer, meditation, yoga, or all of the above, it's helpful. So that's why I took the yoga and became certified. So with that, I found that it helped quite a lot. And now I forget where I was going with that point.
Oh, books. Books. You got one on a court case.
So I found doing yoga at the hospital really helpful. Now, part of it was I was stretching out after the bike ride. But I just found it really helpful because many times you're waiting for test results. And that is really, that's really difficult. And they, although I try to encourage them to call me with the test results, you know, they don't have the time for that, and they're just, you know, overflowing with patients in need. So while I understood that, I found sitting in the waiting room really, really difficult waiting for these results. So I would do some yoga while I was sitting in the chair, and I would do yoga while I was sitting in the chemotherapy chair. So one of the books is about healing with yoga, and it's a guide for cancer patients that are undergoing treatment, and it's some practical advice. So what it does is there's letters of the alphabet, and then each letter of the alphabet has a little exercise that can be done at the hospital or on in-between dates, in-between chemo dates, just designed to help with the side effects of cancer treatment and going through cancer treatment. So that's one, and the other one is called Your Cat Can Cure You. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but animals, there's lots of benefits. We know this, that animals, you know, studies that they bring down blood pressure and there's lots of good effects. You know, seniors benefit from animals, and throughout the cancer journey, I've had animals. And so I wrote a book about how to benefit from your animal, how to take things from your animal and incorporate it into your life to help with healing. So that's the second one. And the third one is about the cancer journey that I've been through, and it's about how I would use my bicycle and my kayak to heal. And also it's about the animals, the wild animals now, not domestic animals, but wild animals that I would see on my journey, such as beavers, deer, moose, that sort of thing. And I would photograph them, write some poetry about them, and incorporate the life lessons. So that's a summary of the books. And you know, I always think, you know, I'm getting them read by an editor, and I always think they're finished, and then I think of something else. And now, since I'm on bout number three of the fight, I'm saying to my editor, oh, you know, I think I could add another chapter now
with
the brain surgery and everything else. What I'm doing to recover from that. Yeah, so it's been
And I love the idea about the animal one because, yeah, boy, animals are very therapeutic. That is for sure. And I know you love cats. Actually, I bought a few books for Christmas last year for some cat lovers that was on the market, a popular one, How to Tell If Your Cat Is Trying to Kill You.
I was the recipient of that book.
Yes. My wife bought one for you. Yeah, I think too, or I had recommended it to her. And so, okay, you're a cat lover, I'm a dog lover, I had a cat as well, love cats. And they do bring your blood pressure down. They also tend to know when you're not feeling well. So they get all cozy and comfy and start cuddling with you when you're not feeling well. Somehow they can tell. And so that's a great one. And so, wow, interesting. And writing, I think, also would get your mind off of your cancer because we have an estimated 30 to 50,000 thoughts a day. And as you said earlier, when you have cancer, probably like 90% of those thoughts are like, I got cancer, I got cancer, I got cancer. And so those things. Yeah, so exercising, writing, praying, meditating at least empties your thoughts of those paralyzing fears you might have and allows you to kind of reach into a deeper part of your consciousness, your soul, and also maybe reach down deep where you say, I don't care, I'm going to beat this thing, however many times it comes back.
And however many times they tell me I'm not going to, that's the other thing, is that they're very good about giving you statistics at the hospital.
And I told them,
well, I took it the second time. I took I had a red marker, and I wrote on the top of my file on the front, remission. And I said, that's where I'm going. Now, I don't want to hear your statistics. I'm not a statistic. I'm a person. So, I'm a very difficult patient, and I concede that. But you know what? We have to think positively. If we don't think positively and my health team isn't thinking positively, then, how am I going to beat it? So the health team has to believe I'm going to beat it, too.
Exactly.
That's a tough challenge.
They have to, by their crazy laws, give you those statistics. And I used to hate those.
Oh, I know.
The one that was like, oh, you have a something percent odd, they would tell my parents, oh, there's a fairly high odds he'll end up in a wheelchair in his teens. And I would be like, piss off. There's a fairly low odds of that happening.
That's right. I'm not going to let that happen. And that's my attitude, too, is, I mean, I know that they say, now the cancer's moved into your brain, and, you probably have X amount of time to live. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. I can't accept that.
No,
that's not,
please.
That's not me. That may be your average statistic, but that's not me.
Right.
I intend to keep kicking and fighting being a difficult patient is not necessarily being a bad patient.
No.
Being difficult may be the best thing you can do for yourself.
It's kind of an indicator to your medical team, to the devil, and to your disease that just get the hell out of here. You're not going to beat me. And so keep fighting, we'll be watching, this is an exciting adventure you're on. Now, this part of it seems to be out of your control, but we'll watch you deal with that and keep up the amazing, great work and the great attitude. And now is a time in life where you're really, really being able to encourage and make a contribution to other people. And so keep that up, that's a great purpose for you to have.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I think it was during my first fight that you sent me a book through Kim, and I think the book was called Your Second Half.
Yeah, Halftime.
Halftime, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew you'd know which one I was referring to.
Yeah.
And I found that book very, very inspirational. And so I do believe that I'm on my second half. I may be a little old to be starting the second half, but anyway, having said that, I do believe I'm in my second half, and it's now time to make a contribution in other ways.
I think so, and this may be the legacy that you leave behind despite all the years of being a criminal defense lawyer and a triathlete. This may be the purpose and the journey that impacts the most lives.
Well, I hope you're right, because I'm certainly on the road for long enough. I'm hoping that I will be able to impact some lives. And if I can help, I always say that at the hospital. I ask the nurses when I go in, is there anybody that needs me to talk to them today? Because my nurse would wear my medals around the hospital and tell people that we're going through chemotherapy, look, you can do this. You can go for a walk. You can do these things. And I hope that people will look at me and say, well, if she can do that, I can do something too.
Yes. Very good. Well, thank you so much for your time, and have an amazing day.
And thank you, Tom, and you too. Bye now.